In the year 1991, U.S. Flight 1313 soared unknowing unto its death. As the vessel sank into the ocean's depths, three boys washed ashore on Skull Face Island. Near death, pursued by vicious creatures, the boys stumbled upon shelter. Who built it and for what purpose, none could say. But, to their shock and amazement, a 55-inch TV glowed within, streaming every movie ever made.
I'd stick my neck out for nobody.
What the hell is this?
You're an inhuman monster!
I said good day!
After 20 years struggling for survival, they managed to repair the shelter's communication device. Perhaps someday, they'll be rescued. But until then, they'll watch and discuss movies, hoping, praying you're listening.
Hello there, this is Adam Frazier, and you are listening to Skullface Island, the official movie podcast of geeksofdoom.com. As always, I'm joined by the guy who knocks, David Allen.
Hello.
And our resourceful producer, Tim, ain't nobody got time for that, Grant.
Hello.
Today on the show, we'll discuss David O. Russell's latest film, Silver Linings Playbook, as well as Rich Moore's animated adventure, Wreck-It Ralph. We'll also boot up the Geek-O-Matic Telefax for all the latest news on X-Men, Star Trek, Batman, and, of course, Star Wars Episode 7. But first, it's time for our
Skullface Selects,
also known as our Picks of the Week. David, your pick?
My pick this week is American Horror Story's first season, which is now on Netflix. I know there's probably some people who didn't actually get to watch this, and if you haven't watched this ridiculous show, please get on it. It's a great cast, constant subversions of the horror tropes, and an all-around creepy feeling make this great escapist television show that isn't entirely stupid.
Yes, my sentiments exactly. My pick this week is Halo 4, developed by 343 Industries for the Xbox 360. This is the first installment in a new trilogy of Halo games known as the Reclaimer Trilogy. And if you've been playing Halo for the past 11 years, you kind of know what you're getting into here. But this game has gorgeous graphics, an intense campaign, and the multiplayer experience has been completely revamped. This is a must-own video game, and it's a huge hit amongst the natives.
It really is.
I mean, we've been playing it nonstop.
Yeah.
Tim,
yeah.
Your pick?
My pick is King Kelly. This is a deeply satirical film. It's about a softcore porn internet star named Kelly. The movie is basically a found footage movie. It's seen through the lens of webcams and phone cameras, and it exposes this unsettling movement of internet culture, and I guess you could argue society as a whole, even towards this self-obsessed and diminishing attention span that we seem to have. It's really, really poignant in kind of a strange, offbeat way. It's a little bit hard to watch, but I can't stop thinking about this movie. It is playing in theater, single, the Cinema Village in New York, New York. And it starts November 30th, and it's also on video on demand beginning December 4th.
Make sure you check those out. Tim, would you be a deer and boot up the Geek-O-Matic Telefax, please? All right, first headline. James McAvoy, Michael Fassbender, Nicholas Hoult, Jennifer Lawrence, Ian McKellen, and Patrick Stewart confirmed for Bryan Singer's X-Men Days of Future Past.
Oh, man.
One step forward, two steps back.
Yeah, we're really just, I mean, this is, it's happening now.
It's great to know that these guys are involved, but it's still Bryan Singer doing it, and yeah. I just don't care.
The thing that's bothering me is I know that all they're doing is, they're basically they're rebooting it without having to lose the cast.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That's all that's happening.
Because you know we're just a few days away from like Famke Johnson and Hugh Jackman being confirmed.
They're going to basically, sure. They're going to go into the future. They're going to see that things are all screwy. And then they're going to fix whatever happened, but they're going to do something that makes it to where the future we know as the original X-Men trilogy didn't happen. And this way we can still tell this story into a modern day, but without having to worry about the past films anymore.
Oh, God, Jesus.
That's exactly what's happening.
Wow.
Read the next headline.
All right. The official Star Trek Into Darkness, sans colon, synopsis hints at a challenging epic adventure. Basically, with the synopsis that's been released, it's pretty kind of vague, but there are some details that I think a lot of people would like to know. When the crew of the Enterprise is called back home, they find an unstoppable force of terror from within their own organization has detonated the fleet and everything it stands for, leaving our world in a state of crisis. With a personal score to settle, Captain Kirk leads a manhunt to a war zone world to capture a one-man weapon of mass destruction.
Whoa.
As our heroes are propelled into an epic chess game of life and death, love will be challenged, friendships will be torn apart, and sacrifices must be made for the only family Kirk has left, his crew.
Who's the villain?
I think it's Charlie X.
Mm-hmm. From the original series.
From the original series, who was kind of a precursor to the Q in the Star Trek Next Generation.
I think Spock dies in this movie.
I don't think so. I don't think they're going to do that. Star Trek has done that twice now. They killed Data. They killed Spock.
There are whales that need to be saved, David. What's our next headline?
Basically, they have confirmed that director Colin Trevorrow is going to direct Flight of the Navigator remake for Disney, and he will also write it, I believe.
Yes, with his writing partner from Safety Not Guaranteed.
Yeah.
This makes a lot of sense. We heard rumors that Trevorrow was involved with maybe Star Wars Episode 7, but turns mm-hmm. out the meetings he was having with Disney was for this, which is more up his alley, I think.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not too happy about this, but I think he'll be able to handle it really, really well.
Why aren't you too happy about it?
I just think Flight of the Navigator is a really great movie. I don't feel like it's one of the ones that... I mean, it could maybe benefit from some better graphics, stuff like that, but it's still really solid. It stands up really well.
Yeah.
So
I think it's just Disney after Tron. I think they've went back into that wheelhouse.
No, I think so too.
Trying to find things to
do. We'll be seeing all sorts of stuff coming up. So I think Explorers is definitely going to get one.
Starman.
Starman.
All right. Last headline here. And this is kind of an update of what we've been talking about. Actor Jason Fleming all but confirms Matthew Vaughn is directing Star Wars Episode 7.
It sounds pretty much like that is the case.
Fleming was at a junket and kind of let it slip that Vaughn was on Episode 7 duties.
Yeah.
And Fleming is one of Vaughn's really close friends. He's been in pretty much all of his movies.
Yeah, every film he's produced and directed, he showed up in just about.
So, yeah, we'll see. It's crazy news.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's all the time we have for news this week. Very informative, as always. Guys, you know the drill. Grab your jammers. It's time to find that 8-bit silver lining. It's movie time.
So Wreck-It Ralph has been out for a little bit, but after our video game list from last week, we thought we should give our opinion on the movie pretty much. So we're going to talk about that really, really fast.
My name's Wreck-It Ralph.
I'm going to wreck it!
30 years I've been doing this.
I can fix it!
It's hard to love your job when no one else seems to like you for doing it.
You're just the bad guy who wrecks the building.
If I'm really honest with myself, sure must be nice being the good guy.
Ralph, you are a bad guy. But this does not mean you're a bad guy.
I don't want to be the bad guy anymore.
Wreck-It Ralph is the villain of a Donkey Kong Jr. type game. He climbs up an apartment building, smashes in the windows, and then he stands atop it and stomps, causing further damage to the building. Now, the namesake of the game in the movie, Fix-It Felix, is basically Mario and climbs up the building and he fixes everything with his little golden hammer.
Yep.
So within the movie, Ralph is sick of being the bad guy. He feels ostracized from his fellow game characters in his own game as well as all other games. And he decides to try and go against the nature of his program and be the hero in another game. The adventure leads him through a number of different games, meeting other characters who feel similar to himself. And it's a kid's movie, so the ending and really just the general structure of the film is pretty predictable.
Sure.
There are lessons to be learned and bad guys to get theirs, blah, blah, blah. The movie is basically Toy Story with video games.
Yes.
When you break down the plot and themes, they line up almost perfectly. The reason it works, for me at least, and I'm sure for most people from my generation who had an interest in video games, is because this kind of movie increases the mythology of all those games we played.
Uh-huh.
We see so many classic characters walking through Game Central, which is essentially like a multi-plug outlet for all the arcade games. You see, you know, Ryu and Ken from Street Fighter. You see Sonic at one point. You see Q-Bert.
Just Pac-Man.
Pac-Man. All of them. I'm pretty sure I saw Paperboy at one point.
Yep.
And it's cool because the characters are taken from their typical 2D universe and brought into this sort of dynamic three-dimensional reality. And we observe the depth of their plights as well. And they live for our entertainment, but they struggle with age and wear and tear. And there's actually a scene where an arcade game is being removed from the floor, and it is a very sad moment.
It's tragic.
It's tragic. But the movie's great for kids. The story really takes over after the first third, which is reserved really for nostalgia, which I think was a smart kind of structuring because it's actually a pretty great little like plot that they have going.
Uh-huh.
And they do leave a lot of the nostalgia behind. And it ends up being a really effective movie on its own. It's fun, not too incredible by any means, but it was really cool, funny. There's a great subplot between two characters that are played by Jack McBrayer and Jane Lynch. And also, there was an Aerith Lives graffiti reference to Final Fantasy VII that made my week. So.
So I have a question.
Yeah.
About this movie. I did see this movie. And this actually came up on the Slash Filmcast several weeks ago. But and before I say this, I should preface this by saying I don't really believe in dumbing down kids' movies.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I agree with that.
I think that Where the Wild Things Are is an incredible movie, kids' movie. People went crazy about that, about how it was too scary for the kids, and
right.
I hate that bullshit.
But you look at old Disney movies, and they're all really scary.
They're really scary.
So,
but my question here is with the main character, Ralph, and the moral of the story being that you have to accept your place in life and just make the best of it. Did you get that, David? I mean, am I being a little bit too critical of, or maybe I'm taking away the wrong thing?
I think I could see how that would come about, but I think that there's so many other characters who end up being able to move past or to better themselves, and that's because of the support that Ralph gives them. So Ralph helps the girl in the Sugar Rush game become something that she was originally not. So he helps her move out of her place in life. You know, this sort of like, which is the exact opposite of what it sounds like the criticism might be. Ralph may not get past, but his stance even in itself, his stance changes. I mean, for literally, there's an actual image of it in the sense that there's a cake for the, you know, the 20th anniversary of the game or something. And in the first version of the cake, he's down on the ground in the mud. And then the very last thing you see pretty much is him on top of the building with everybody else.
Yeah.
So it's he may be serving the same function,
yeah,
but his life is not the same.
Yeah, I just think it's your job doesn't define you.
Right. I think that's a much better way of looking at it.
Yeah.
So, and I thought that was really effective. So.
Yeah, no, I'm satisfied with that. I was just curious about your opinion about that, because I thought that it was something that was interesting that was brought up.
Yeah. I think that a lot of the older kids' movies used to be much more intense and things like that, but we're living in a Pixar era now, and Pixar has these much more like subtle like meanings that are really heavy, but they're not on, you know, like full display. And this movie doesn't have a very deep meaning. And so it does feel a little sort of low par. It's not quite as good as what you would expect from these movies now, because we've got such, you know, such an awesome standard that's been set.
Yeah, but much better in terms of Disney animations.
Yeah, studio. For a Disney produced film, I mean, but granted, a ton of Pixar people worked on it.
Oh, absolutely.
So,
one other thing I want to say about this, Alan Tudyk, is that how you say his name?
Tudyk.
I think so.
Tudyk.
Yeah, I think so.
Does the best Ed Wynn impersonation I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah.
It was hard to believe how incredible, I mean, and just consistently, everything about it. And I don't know if you know who Ed Wynn is. He was famously Uncle Albert from Mary Poppins. That laughed his way up into the ceiling. But man, it's so good, and it was great to hear that voice again in a movie.
Yeah, I completely agree.
David, what is your rating for Wreck-It Ralph?
My rating is 75 out of 100 experience points.
Aha!
Da-na-na-na! That was the little Final Fantasy end of battle.
Yeah, I got it.
Jingle.
Noted.
If there was a camera, it'd be spinning around us, and it'd be like... Written and directed by David O. Russell, Silver Linings Playbook stars Bradley Cooper as a troubled man who has lost everything. His house, his job, and his wife. Things take an unexpected turn, however, when he meets kindred crazy person, Tiffany, played by Jennifer Lawrence, a young woman trying to cope with her husband's death.
What meds are you on?
I used to be on lithium and Seroquel.
I was on Xanax.
You ever take Klonopin?
Klonopin, yeah.
Like, is it what?
I'm tired, I wanna go. Are you gonna walk me home or what?
You have poor social skills. You have a problem.
I have a problem? Mm-hmm. You say more inappropriate things than appropriate things.
Doc, she's crazy.
Hey!
Whoa, what the hell? She knew where I was, she followed me.
Then why don't you run somewhere else?
Calm down, crazy.
Maybe she just needs a friend.
You wanna have dinner at this diner?
Pick me up at 7:30.
So how's your job?
I just got fired, actually.
Oh, really? How?
By having sex with everybody in the office.
Everybody?
Oh, she's a mess. You gotta be careful. She does a lot of therapy.
I go to a lot of therapy. Am I messed up?
I just gotta get a strategy, you know?
Me too.
Silver Linings Playbook is a delightful, uplifting film that, soars on incredible performances. Jackie Weaver from Animal Kingdom delivers a very realistic portrayal as Bradley Cooper's worried, overprotective Philly mother, while Robert De Niro's Pat Sr., who's a bookmaker and a sports fanatic in the film, the depth of his character is amazing. I mean, he goes from obsessively arranging his television remotes and rubbing his lucky handkerchief during Eagles games. And this is just the best De Niro has been since the mid-90s, you know, since, I guess, Heat.
Yeah.
You know, and Casino. Sure, he's been a funny character lately in films like Meet the Parents, all those terrible spinoff sequels, and Machete. But here he plays a living, breathing person who buries his emotions and attempts to bond with his troubled son over the age-old father-son bonding opportunity of watching the game together. And as a father unable to express his emotions, Pat Sr. is really forced to confront his son and in turn open up and address some of his own emotional hang-ups, which De Niro here is just amazing. He deserves Best Supporting Actor, I think, for this. Of course, we haven't seen everything that's going to fill out the field, but I really hope the Academy recognizes him for this. And likewise, Bradley Cooper and Jennifer Lawrence display an amazing versatility and surprising range here in their performances as these very imperfect people searching for a silver lining. And, you know, it should be mentioned, I mean, the trailer pretty much spells it out, but Bradley Cooper is on tons of medication for anxiety and depression and all this stuff. He had a complete psychotic breakdown, as did Jennifer Lawrence's character. And, you know, usually with romantic comedies, the reason for love is inherent, right? I mean, it's like Katherine Heigl is super attractive. Gerard Butler is super attractive. They should hook up so we can watch, because that's what we want. We want to see hot people hook up, because it gives us hope that we can hook up with hot people. And that's not true. But here there is I'm saying on the island, guys, it's just us.
I don't know about you, but I'm beautiful.
Well, hey, beauty's only skin deep. I'm just saying, Geeks of Doom, as great as they are, they're not going to airdrop Scarlett Johansson into the island. And if they do, I will murder you both in your sleep in the fucking heartbeat. Anyway, There's a real palpable chemistry between Cooper and Lawrence in this movie, and you really feel that they need each other, and we love watching them not only try to repair each other's broken hearts, but their minds. And of course, they're drop-dead gorgeous and sexy as hell, so that doesn't hurt either. But for me, Silver Linings Playbook is one of the best films of the year. It's a great follow-up to David O. Russell's 2010 film, The Fighter. Feels very similar in the way that Russell made Lowell, Massachusetts a character of itself.
Mm-hmm.
Philadelphia is very much a character and an integral part of this story. A humorous, relatable journey into all matters of the heart. Silver Linings Playbook is a reminder that we've all got baggage and problems and shit to worry about, but if we can get past that, we can find things that make life worth living.
Hmm.
And I will say, you know, it's probably a tad predictable.
Yeah.
But it is the kind of the really feel good, quirky in a way, but honest best picture contender.
It feels like Russell has been, it's like he's been taking these very typical cinematic stories.
Yep.
And really trying to dive as deeply as possible into who the characters are, really. And, like, The Fighter is, you know, it's a typical sort of, like, comeback sports story.
Uh-huh.
But by really pushing every single character, just, like, really focusing, as you know, as much attention as he did on Christian Bale's character.
Yes.
It informs so much more about everybody else in the film, particularly Wahlberg's character. And that's what it sounds like is happening here. Is that wrong or?
No, that's spot on.
So we can expect.
Good form, Peter.
We can expect another movie in the Northeast.
That's right.
After this one.
Yeah. He's working his way down the coast.
Yeah, it'll be about a cook.
Yeah, the next one's in Washington, D.C.
So, yeah, it'll be David O. Russell's All Mostly Martha.
Where does this fall for you on your list of favorites? I mean, it sounds like you liked it, but
yeah,
I can't really figure out where it falls. You placed it?
I liked this movie a lot. I have placed it. I am not ready to reveal my top 10. But I will say that as of right now, it is in the top 5.
Oh, snap.
Oh, sugar, sugar now.
Wow.
Yeah. No, I did. I really enjoyed it. And I think barring Jessica Chastain now getting a lot of buzz for Zero Dark Thirty.
Right.
I think unless she completely blows it out of the water, this is Jennifer Lawrence right here. Best.
Isn't that amazing that she can put out something like The Hunger Games and then this.
Yeah. And House at the End of the Street.
Right.
Fuck.
But yeah, I was going to say, I really haven't liked Jennifer Lawrence since Winter's Bone.
She's made some good stuff outside of Winter's Bone.
What?
She was going to say X-Men First Class.
Well, she wasn't bad in X-Men First Class.
She looked like crap.
What?
The makeup in that movie.
Oh, the makeup.
Drove me insane.
Sorry, I thought you meant the part where she was naked wearing blue body paint. Shut up, David.
I didn't see Like Crazy.
She was in Like Crazy. She was great.
Oh, is she in Like Crazy? Yeah. I didn't see that either.
Yep.
She was good in it?
Yeah, she was great. I mean, she's a great actress.
Would you say she was crazy good?
Likely.
Okay.
Oh, God.
Wow, that got bad. That was awesome. That was a double terrible
You
joke.
So crazy. Here's my rating.
Yeah.
5 Ernest Hemingway novels.
Okay.
4 prescription medications and 1 Chris Tucker. Chris Tucker is in this movie and he's really good in it. And he's very restrained and he's not like over the top Chris Tucker that you know.
Right.
He's put on a little weight actually and it looks good on him. Like he looks really healthy and all there.
So I want to make sure, I want to be clear that Adam's rating is not to imply that if you see this movie, you're going to want to kill yourself.
No.
Because 4 Hemingway novels. 5 Hemingway novels. 4 prescription medications and Chris Tucker.
Yeah.
That sounds like
suicide.
I mean, that's an equation that, you know, equals in a sum of suicide.
Yeah. This movie is really, my rating reflects the exact opposite of that that the movie is a life-affirming, uplifting version of downing prescription medication and reading Ernest Hemingway.
Okay, good.
Cool. I'm glad you clarified.
Right on.
Yeah, sure. No problem. Pop it,
D-man! I believe that love that is true and real creates a respite from death. And when the man who is brave and true looks death squarely in the face, like some rhino hunters I know, or Belmonte, who's truly brave, it is because they love with sufficient passion to push death out of their minds until it returns, as it does to all men. And then you must make really good love again.
All night long.
Again.
All
again.
Night long.
Again.
All night.
Think about it.
Unbelievable!
I guess that's it for movie time. We need to take a time out to recognize the folks that keep the generators running in the restless natives at bay. Geeks of Doom has all the best geek-related scoops on comics, movies, television, and pop culture paraphernalia. Help us avoid certain death and visit geeksofdoom.com. Now, back to the show. Guys, it's that fateful time again.
Oh, God.
The Treehouse Gods demand that we play a movie-based game to appease the mighty T'Challa, who, I don't know if you noticed or not, is literally standing right outside the treehouse, staring in.
He's staring in right now.
Don't make eye contact.
I'm trying not to.
He's breathing, and it's like leaving snot and stuff on the glass. Tim, that I want you to know, you're cleaning that up. I did it last time.
I feel like I'm not looking, but can you confirm that his tendrils are actually spelling out red rum on the window?
They are, and with his other tendril hand, he just gave me the finger.
Oh, God.
So the game we're going to play today is two plots and a lie.
Oh, okay.
Where someone will be read three movie plots. Two of them are real movies.
Right.
One of them is made up.
Right.
And that person has to decide which one's which.
Okay. So I tend to get picked for these, and that I actually did pretty well the last time we did
you
this.
You did. You did.
Yeah.
So you saved
I'm
us
I'm feeling
all.
Good.
I have some faith in you.
I'm feeling good.
Yeah. Well, let's go ahead and get the Mystic Spinner out
here.
All right.
Here it is.
Let it go, Tim.
All right. Here we go.
Always hands on down.
Yep.
And sure David.
Enough. Oh, God.
Oh, wait.
What?
It's Adam.
What? The Mystic Spinner chose David and then counterclockwise spun and has now selected me.
This is no good. Because you know what this means.
We're near Australia? Because doesn't the water go counterclockwise?
That's not true as far as I understand.
Oh, okay.
It could be some T'Challa voodoo.
I think he knew that I would win this game. And he doesn't have faith in you.
That motherfucker.
You guys showed this guy who's boss.
All right. I've prepared all week. I haven't. I've played Halo.
Oh, God. Yeah, we're screwed,
I
Tim.
I know it. I know. This could be the end.
All right, Tim, just give me the first one.
All right, here you go.
Okay. All right. Are you ready, Adam?
I am so ready.
Okay. A young man meets and falls in love with a young woman at the La Brea Tar Pits in Los Angeles, also known as Los Angeles. This area is known as Miracle Mile, and the whole movie takes place there. They make a date, which he misses, and while he is searching for her, he accidentally finds out that the United States is about to start a nuclear war with the Soviet Union. He frantically searches for her so that they can escape Los Angeles. The city of
Man. Wow. Okay.
What are your first thoughts?
La Brea Tar Pits.
Mm-hmm.
Nuclear War.
Yep.
Miracle Mile.
Yep. It's got everything.
It's got everything you could want.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Is this ringing any bells?
I can't say it is.
Okay.
It sounds like a great movie, though.
It does sound like a great movie.
Well, ponder it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, while you listen to this one.
Yeah.
A girl is the keeper of a mysterious egg in a post-apocalyptic world. She collects strange fossils and artifacts in a dead city filled with ancient statues. Then, a strange man walks into town with a cross-shaped weapon on his back. All of the sudden, apparitions of giant prehistoric fish start to appear, and the town's ancient statues come alive and begin to hunt the massive fish.
That sounds like the greatest movie ever made.
Then...
What?
Then the man tells the girl a story, and he waits for her to sleep. Once she's asleep, he breaks her egg. Filled with anguish, the girl drowns.
Oh my God.
The end.
That went to a dark place quick. So let me get this straight. There's a girl with a magic egg, and she collects these kinds of things, little tokens and whatnot. And she lives in an abandoned city filled with statues.
That's right.
And she sees ghosts of fish, giant fish.
After a strange man walks into town.
Yes.
With a cross-shaped weapon.
Cross-shaped weapon. Like a crossbow. Like a gun that shoots crucifixes.
Who knows?
Could be either one of those.
It's a post-apocalyptic world. Both of those things are entirely possible.
And then he breaks the egg.
Mm-hmm.
And the girl drowns?
Yeah.
From anguish.
Oh my gosh. She throws herself off a bridge and drowns?
The end.
That's some heavy, heavy shit. Yeah, I don't know if I'm ready for the third movie.
Well, do you want me to give it to you?
I guess.
Okay.
Do children drown?
I don't know. I'm going to read it to you.
Oh, well, okay.
In 17th century Japan, during the Edo period, a regional daimyo kidnaps the wife of a local farmer and retired samurai when he refuses to help destroy a local bandit group. After the kidnapping, the farmer joins the bandits to take back his wife and kill the daimyo. The samurai, having supported the immoral bandits, finds himself haunted by the spirit of the daimyo. He starts to blame the spirit for troubles in the region. In order to end the spirit's terror, the samurai kills himself.
Whoa. So let me get this straight, and I'm not looking out the window because I know T'Challa is looking, but...
He's staring right at you.
There's a lot of fucking suicides. A lot of death.
Yeah.
I think he means to take you on this one.
Oh my God.
He's out for the kill tonight.
Okay.
So you've got a guy frantically looking for his newfound love while a nuclear war has just started.
At the La Brea Tar Pits.
You got a girl, keeper of this mysterious egg.
Sure.
And a strange guy walks into town and crazy shit happens.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you've got a samurai. Mixed up in some really weird stuff.
Some ghost shit. Kills himself. Two are real, one is not.
Right.
That's correct. Find the one that is not.
All right.
Can you do it? Our lives depend on this.
I believe the samurai movie is real.
Okay.
All right.
I believe, as fucked up crazy as it sounds... The fucking egg fish ghost movie is real. I just got a feeling that that's a crazy ass anime or some sort of fucking Miyazaki movie that's been buried beneath sea level or something.
I think this is good logic you're using.
I think the La Brea Tar Pits nuclear war romantic comedy is not a real movie.
Is this your final answer?
T'Challa, please God, don't eat me. Yes, final answer.
David.
You're wrong.
No. So the La Brea Tar Pits is actually a movie? Yes. I need information. Before T'Challa kills me, I need to know the truth. Tell me about this movie.
Miracle Mile was made in 1988.
What? I cannot believe it. Who's in this movie?
A man by the name of Anthony Edwards.
You shut your mouth. Anthony Edwards?
Yes.
From ER?
Yes.
And Revenge of the Nerds, of course.
Let's not forget. Never forget.
Holy shit.
That shit is real.
Wow. Okay.
So... Your logic for the anime was correct.
Yes. What's that movie?
Angel's Egg, I believe it's called.
That's right.
When was it made?
1985.
Yeah.
And it's an animated movie?
Uh-huh.
Is it?
I think so.
We don't even know.
I think we should, you know.
Find it.
I think we should get blitzed with the natives and watch that shit. That
well, Tim cool. and I will. You're dead.
Yeah. you son of a bitch.
So his tendril is actually inviting you outside.
I see it wiggling. It's so, doing a come hither kind of thing.
Ooh.
Give me 1 minute. I'm going to go talk to him. and see if he can let us finish this transmission.
Okay.
All right.
I appreciate what you're doing. Tim, while David is gone, so the samurai one was the one that's made up?
That's right.
God, that's clever.
And its made up name was Samurai's Revenge Motherfuckers.
Whoa. Are we sure that's not the RZA sequel to Man with the Iron Fists?
No, I've copyrighted that.
Okay, good.
So I talked to him. He said he'd let us finish the transmission, and then he wants you to come outside.
No, that's never good.
You did some great negotiating, Andrew. I'm sure Adam is very grateful. You bought him 1 minute. Our friend of 20 years.
Jesus.
You bought him one solitary
minute.
Well,
I mean, I tried, but he basically said, like, all right, I didn't want to do this. He said, I'll let Adam live if I can have Tim.
Whoa.
But
and what did you say?
Adam lost the game.
That's right.
He's
holding up a six-pack of Pabst Blue Ribbon with his tendril right now, pointing at it and then pointing at me. What does that mean?
I think you guys are just going to get drunk and he's going to tickle you silly. Which might be worse than dying by his hand.
After all this Elmo news, I don't know if I'm ready.
Oh, shit.
Oh, goodness.
I do not want to be T'Challa's personal hand puppet.
I think we need to close this out.
Well, as much as it pains me to conclude my final episode of Skullface Island as I go off into the nether realm of who knows? atrocities await me.
T'Challa's terror.
Yeah, that's what they call it. That's it. Another transmission is done from Skullface Island. As always, you can call the Skullface Island hotline at 980-272-0111 or email us at skullfaceisland@gmail.com. And you can also tweet us at Skullface Island and like our Facebook page at facebook.com/Skullface Island. And, jeez.
Good luck out there.
Do you guys have any like hints, suggestions, advice? Like, how do I prepare for something like this?
Close your eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Put a stick in between your teeth.
Sure.
And pray to Jesus.
Who?